Welcome to Voyage Daily Tech, the most important news personalized for you every day, supported by Voyage.com.
Today, we're sharing five stories. First, we'll look at why Silicon Valley billionaires like Peter Thiel and former Google CEO Eric Schmidt are pouring billions into military tech, funding everything from weaponized drones to a nuclear fusion startup. Second, AI is deaf to over 2,000 African languages, but a group of researchers is fighting back with a massive new audio dataset funded by a $2.2 million Gates Foundation grant. Third, Amazon is taking on Elon Musk's Starlink for control of in-flight Wi-Fi. Let's start with a story that caught everyone by surprise. While overall deal-making is in a freefall, some of the biggest names in tech are placing massive bets on a new frontier. Military power. Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel just joined a $62 million fundraise for a German developer of weaponized drones. So, what's making Germany such a hotbed for this kind of investment? Spurred by geopolitical tensions, the country is planning to nearly triple its annual defense budget. This has created a gold rush for startups developing advanced technologies like AI and autonomous systems. And investors like Thiel are getting in on the ground floor, but he's not the only one. A seismic shift is happening in the world of the ultra wealthy. While investments from billionaire family offices have plunged by nearly 50% year over year, they are pouring money into specific high stakes sectors. The driving force behind this is the artificial intelligence boom, which will require immense power. Goldman Sachs research forecasts that data center power demand, driven almost entirely by AI, is set to increase by 165% by 2030. That's more than double the energy consumption in just a few years. This is the bottleneck that keeps these billionaires up at night. So the family offices of former Google CEO Eric Schmidt, hedge fund billionaire Stanley Druckenmiller, and philanthropist Lauren Powell-Jobs just joined an $863 million fundraise for the nuclear fusion startup Commonwealth Fusion Systems. This move is significant. They are essentially acting as a private version of a government agency like DARPA, funding moonshot research. By backing nuclear fusion, they aren't just betting on clean energy, they are making a strategic bet to secure the near limitless power source their AI empires will need to function in the future. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos' family office co-led a $314 million round for a robotics startup that helps robots learn in physical environments. Now, on the surface, this sounds purely civilian robots for construction sites. However, if you zoom out, you'll see the dual-use dilemma at play. The same AI that teaches a robot to navigate a complex construction site could, with a few modifications, teach a military drone to navigate a battlefield. The technical and ethical barriers between these two uses are alarmingly thin, and there are very few regulations to stop it. But this isn't just about energy and robots. It's a pivot to hard power. Thiel himself once wrote, quote, AI is a military technology. And now, other deep-pocketed investors who once shunned defense assets are jumping in. What's fascinating is how the narrative is changing. For years, many of these investors stayed away from defense for ethical or ESG, environmental, social, and governance reasons. But following geopolitical events like the invasion of Ukraine, many are now framing defense investments as ethical by focusing on the idea of defending democracy and protecting sovereignty. And it's working. European ESG funds have more than doubled their holdings in defense stocks in just the last 2 years. The founder of Spotify, Daniel Ek, just led a nearly $700 million round for a Munich-based defense tech firm. And the billionaire family behind Volkswagen and Porsche just announced plans to host a Defense Day networking event to find co-investors for European defense startups. A single statistic really shows the scale of this gold rush. In just the last quarter, venture capital investment in defense tech hit $19.1 billion. That's a 200% annual increase. The question is no longer if big tech is in the defense business, but how deep it will go. We were just talking about the massive investments pouring into the future of AI, but that future isn't arriving for everyone at the same time. While tools like ChatGPT are changing the world, they're almost entirely deaf to the over 2,000 languages spoken across Africa. For millions, this means being locked out of the future. The core of the problem is that these powerful AI models were built on a foundation of text. They learned by reading a gigantic portion of the internet, which is overwhelmingly in English, but many African languages have rich, centuries-old oral traditions, not massive digital text libraries. So if there's no text to read, the AI simply can't learn. This isn't just an inconvenience. As one CEO on the ground puts it, not speaking English can mean missing out on essential services like healthcare, banking, or even government support. The language barrier is real, and the stakes are enormous. But a group of African researchers is now fighting back. They just released what is thought to be the largest known data set of African languages, a massive project designed to teach AI how to finally speak to the continent. Here's where it gets interesting. Instead of relying on text, this project is built on audio. They are using advanced machine learning techniques that can bypass the need for a written corpus altogether. Some of these are called end-to-end models, which can learn to map spoken words directly to concepts and meaning. This is a fundamental shift in how AI can be built for the majority of the world's languages. This is a direct challenge to the status quo. Fueled by a $2.2 million Gates Foundation grant, the African Next Voices project spent 2 years recording 9,000 hours of real, everyday speech across Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa. As one computational linguist involved said, big tech can't always see those nuances. And those nuances are incredibly important. You know, even within a single language, there can be dozens of regional dialects. When you build an AI, you have to decide which version to prioritize. This creates a huge political and cultural challenge. If an AI standardizes one dialect, it can effectively marginalize others, creating a new digital hierarchy. Research has already shown that AI models can develop biases against what they consider non-standard speech, so getting this right from the start is critical, and it's already working. In South Africa, a farmer uses an app called AI Farmer in her home language, Setswana, to diagnose sick plants and get advice on insect control. She says for somebody in a rural area, it's a game changer. This isn't just about business and convenience. It's a battle. Because when you convert a spoken language full of history, proverbs, and unique ways of thinking into machine-readable data, something is almost inevitably lost. Experts worry about a kind of cultural compression, the risk of creating a flattened or culturally lossy version of a language. You don't just lose words, you risk losing the very worldview that is embedded within them. The lead researcher on the project delivered a statement that reveals the true battle being fought. He said, language is access to imagination. It's not just words, it's history, culture, knowledge. If indigenous languages aren't included, we lose more than data. We lose ways of seeing and understanding the world. Speaking of challenging the status quo, a new battle for the skies is officially on. Amazon is taking direct aim at Elon Musk's Starlink, and it just scored its first major airline partner to do it. JetBlue just announced it will install Amazon's Project Kuiper satellite internet on its planes. This is a massive vote of confidence for Amazon's brand new service, which is just getting started. It's a move that positions two of the world's biggest tech titans in a direct showdown for control of in-flight Wi-Fi. Interestingly enough, this isn't just a simple swap. Research shows JetBlue is likely pursuing what's called a hybrid strategy. They're not just dropping their old system, they're planning to integrate Kuiper's new low Earth orbit, or LEO, satellites with their existing geostationary or GEO satellite service. They're doing this because LEO satellites provide that zippy, low latency connection we all want, while the older GEO satellites offer a massive amount of bandwidth over a specific area. By combining them, JetBlue gets the best of both worlds, speed and capacity, with built-in backup. To give you a sense of the stakes, Starlink currently dominates the market with 8,000 satellites in orbit. Amazon's Project Kuiper has only 102. That number sounds impossible to overcome, but Amazon is playing a different game. It's a second mover strategy. They're leveraging their massive existing infrastructure, like the AWS cloud network, to offer unique bundled services that Starlink can't. They're also reportedly developing customer terminals, the dishes that receive the signal for under $400, significantly cheaper than Starlink's current hardware. This is how they plan to compete, not just by launching satellites, but by making their entire ecosystem more accessible and integrated. But that's not the whole picture. The company is facing a Federal Communications Commission deadline to launch roughly 1,500 more satellites by July 2026, just to meet the minimum requirement. The pressure is immense. The issue isn't just about building satellites. It's about finding a ride to space for them. the global launch market is already operating near full capacity, with providers like ULA and Ariane Airspace booked solid. This creates a massive logistical bottleneck. Even Amazon's own rocket company, Blue Origin, has faced delays with its New Glenn rocket, which is now not expected to launch Kuiper satellites until 2026. Amazon has to launch an unprecedented number of satellites in a very short time, using a launch market that is already stretched to its limit. So why would JetBlue bet on the newcomer? The airline's president went on the record praising Kuiper's promise of high speed, low latency, and high reliability, a clear signal that they believe the technology can deliver. Actually, the technology itself is a huge part of the appeal. Kuiper's antenna for airplanes is designed to be smaller and lighter than competitors under 11 inches square and weighing less than 5 pounds. For an airline, every pound counts because it affects fuel efficiency. Before it can be installed, however, that hardware has to go through a rigorous FAA certification process for each aircraft type, which can be complex and time-consuming. Amazon is betting its design will make that process faster and cheaper for airlines. To understand the significance, you have to look at how airplane Wi-Fi has historically worked. Those geostationary satellites I mentioned earlier orbit over 22,000 miles away from Earth. The enormous distance creates high latency or lag, which is why video calls and streaming are often impossible. New LEO constellations from Starlink and Kuiper orbit just a few hundred miles up, drastically cutting that lag and delivering an experience much closer to what you get at home. The battle lines are drawn. The question is, can Amazon launch thousands of satellites in time to build its network and challenge Starlink's empire? Or did JetBlue just make a bet that's years away from paying off? As this battle heats up, there's a bigger issue looming over everyone. With thousands of new satellites being launched, the risk of orbital collisions and space debris is skyrocketing. Experts warn about something called the Kessler syndrome, a chain reaction that could render parts of Earth's orbit unusable for generations. This isn't just a business story. It's about the sustainable use of the final frontier. From a battle between two titans, we now turn to a David and Goliath story in the tech world. A $610 million bombshell just dropped. Software giant Atlassian has bought the browser company, a small startup that dared to go up against Google's Chrome and Apple's Safari. Now, get this. The browser company's main product, the Arc browser, was beloved by a small group of tech-savvy power users but struggled to gain wider adoption. The company's own CEO admitted that its complexity created a natural ceiling on its audience. This is a classic power user trap, where a product is so advanced it intimidates casual users. For the browser company, this acquisition is a perfect exit, landing their technology with a company that targets the professional users who can truly leverage it. But the real story is the shot being fired directly at the tech titans. Atlassian's co-founder and CEO, Mike Cannon-Brookes, went on the record with a statement you have to hear. He said today's most popular browsers are, quote, not built to work, not built to act, not built to do. When he says they're not built to work, he's pointing out a fundamental design flaw. Your current browser is a passive bystander. It treats your tab for a critical work report the exact same way it treats a tab for a cat video. A true work browser would have contextual awareness, integrating directly with your tools and using AI to help you automate tasks. And there's a huge market for this. Research shows that while a staggering 85% of all work in a company happens inside a web browser, less than 10% of organizations have actually adopted a dedicated, secure work browser. If that was just the appetizer, the main course is just being served. It turns out other major players were sniffing around. Before this deal, the browser company was reportedly in acquisition talks with both OpenAI and another AI startup, Perplexity. That's the same Perplexity that, according to reports, offered Google a staggering $34.5 billion for its Chrome browser. This is a fascinating detail because it reveals a massive shift in the tech world. The browser is no longer just a window to the internet. It's becoming the primary battlefield for AI supremacy. The strategic importance here is that the company that controls your browser controls the main interface where you interact with AI. They get direct access to your behavior and your data, which is the gold needed to train even more powerful AI models. This is why AI native companies like OpenAI and Perplexity are desperately trying to get into the browser game. So what's the real end game here? Atlassian believes the browser is broken for people who actually work on computers, and it's putting over $500 million in cash on the line to prove it. And that $610 million price tag isn't just for a niche product with low adoption. The real prize here is the underlying technology and the talent behind the browser company's unreleased AI-powered browser, known as Dyer. Atlassian is betting that this new browser, when integrated with its own suite of work tools, will become an indispensable part of the enterprise workflow. When asked about other high-profile bids in the browser space, the Atlassian CEO took a final swipe, saying, quote, "I'm not sure that stunt PR acquisition offers are really our thing. The browser wars just got a new, very aggressive player. We were just talking about a massive bet on the future of software. Now, let's shift to a major player that's hitting the brakes on its own future-facing plans. General Motors is slowing its electric vehicle push, and the move is sending shockwaves through the auto industry. The auto giant is cutting output at one of its main EV factories. For years, GM has been promoting its flexible factory strategy, the idea that it can build both gas-powered and electric cars on the same assembly line. But the reality is much more complex. Switching a dedicated EV line, like the one for the Cadillac Lyriq, back to building a combustion engine car is incredibly difficult, requiring massive retooling and new worker training. We're talking about a complete production halt for two electric Cadillac SUVs, the Lyriq and the Vistique, for the entire month of December. And for the first 5 months of next year, GM plans to temporarily lay off an entire shift of workers building those cars. For the people on the factory floor, this move directly challenges the promises made during the recent hard-won UAW contracts. Those deals were built on the idea of a just transition, ensuring workers wouldn't be left behind. These layoffs undermine that trust and signal a lot of future instability. This also has a massive ripple effect on the hundreds of smaller companies that supply GM with parts like battery cells and electric motors. These suppliers invested millions, sometimes billions, based on GM's aggressive EV promises. Now, they're left with underutilized factories and huge financial losses. It's a classic example of the bullwhip effect, where a small change at the end of the line causes massive chaos for everyone up the supply chain. What's particularly striking is that the Cadillac Lyriq was considered a relative hit, one of GM's top-selling electric vehicles. This is a big deal because the Lyriq wasn't just another car. It was the flagship that was successfully bringing new, younger customers to the brand, many of them switching from competitors like Tesla. Throttling production now is a major blow to its credibility in the luxury EV market. On top of that, a planned second shift for the upcoming Chevy Bolt EV has been indefinitely delayed. So what's causing this sudden reversal? The answer is a number, $7,500. A new tax and spending law passed by the Trump administration has withdrawn the crucial $7,500 federal tax credit for EV buyers, a subsidy that has propped up the market for about 15 years. But while that tax credit is a huge deal, it might also be a convenient excuse for deeper problems. Recent consumer surveys show that the number one reason people are hesitant to buy an EV isn't the subsidy, it's the fear of high battery repair costs, followed by the initial purchase price and a lack of public charging stations. In fact, a JD Power study found that over half of shoppers who rejected an EV did so because of charging availability concerns. So the demand issue is much more complex than just one subsidy. GM's own CEO, Mary Barra, went on the record with a stark warning just before the change, saying the $7,500 tax credit is driving demand. Without that, that'll slow. Now, the company is officially citing slower EV industry growth and customer demand for its decision. With federal support yanked, one of America's biggest automakers is scaling back its green ambitions. This all begs the question, is this the beginning of the end for the EV boom in the United States?
That's it for today on Voyage Daily Tech. Follow, share, and stay tuned for daily updates coming your way tomorrow.